And that is each and every one of you. I mean you. So welcome to this service today. And we have a board moment from our president, John Riles.
Good morning.
There's no mic. Speak into this.
This is not our attempt to keep things obfuscated, honest. The board is trying out, taking turns, doing a brief stand-up summary of the votes that we had on our recent board meeting, that meeting being last Wednesday on the 24th. First, good news from the stewardship pledge drive. As of April the 19th, we had $212,119 pledged this year. You're applauding yourselves. Thank you very much for all of your efforts. This amount will allow us to maintain our level of programs, activities, and staffing level, as well as continuing to care for our building and grounds. The board authorized the second round of open congregational meetings for the proposed bylaw revisions and the proposed budget for our next fiscal year, that being from July the 1st of 2024 through June of 2025. The meeting, which will cover both topics, will take place at 9 o'clock in the morning on May the 5th before the service. That's May the 5th, 9 o'clock. After revisions to these documents are made, they'll be sent via email to members on or before May the 22nd so they can be voted on at the annual business meeting on June 7th. That's June the 2nd for the annual business meeting. And it's interesting how you can fumble around with paper if you're holding a mic at the same time. Yeah. Leadership Development Committee, consisting of Rosie Hamilton, Spencer Ehrman, and Uwe Neitzel, have nominated three members to fill the upcoming vacancies on the board. They are Hillary Greenbaum, Cheryl Rodakowski, and Ashley Ulmer. I have a brief bio in that email that you're going to be receiving about May 22nd. Howard Baldwin, our treasurer. Definitely Howard. And Karen Stratton, our vice president, another person will be voted on to extend their service with new terms. And finally, the board approves spending funds in this fiscal year to clean the roofs and to restripe the parking lot. Thank you.
We will now rise and sing 1017, Building a New Way.
Yeah.
One another. Say hi. Don't start conversations. There's coffee afterwards. Okay. Shared hope and our uniting belief in a better world. Thank you, Paisley. Now for our affirmation. If you will join us, let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to ourselves and our neighbors. Our opening reading this morning is a poem by Kyle Dargan. I urge you all to look him up. This poem is called My Chains. But my loyalty points, my purchasing power, nothing. But my economies of scale, my digital compression, companionship. But my all-you-can-eat loneliness, my rail rapid integration. But my market-driven love handles my accrued vacancy. But my taste in artisanal bootstrapism. But my choice of protein, of pit-baked avarice, of indulgences. Church collects, so does Caesar. But my supply-side floods, my oh-so-buoyant home, staked and sandbagged on striving's pebbly shore. But my internal combustion, my miles, my carcinogenic kingdom come, nothing. But my fast casual history, every morsel wrapped in a banknote's blood-sketched hagiography. But my user-friendly righteousness, my gross domestic amnesia. In place of the old wants, we find new wants. But my comfort, my tariffed aches, my engorged prerogatives. I made this money. You didn't, right, Ted? But my ability to believe that what I've paid for, I have made. Nothing to lose except ownership of this wallet-sized tomb, these six crisp walls. Join us in singing hymn 123, Spirit of Life.
Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. Spirit of life. We are a community of love and action made possible by the kindness of us all. And as we meditate on building a new way together, please consider the ways in which you can help us reach out to the greater community in need. I invite Jen Fife Adams up to introduce to you Planting Seeds Community of Beaverton, this week's beneficiary of your generosity. Also, will Gil and Paisley come up as ushers?
Hello. Since January of 2017, Planting Seeds Community of Beaverton has been supporting Beaverton refugee and asylum seeker students and their families. Our mission is to help people understand the power they have to change lives for the better, and we've been able to do that to the tune of $65,000 so far. Money you donate will go to support these families through gift card donations. Thank you so much for supporting them. If you'd like to find out more, please visit our website at plantingseedscommunity.org or speak with me or Roger Golliver after the service. Thank you.
Join us in reading our affirmation of giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. And let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Oh, 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 oh. Imagine there's no country. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion too. and all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, oh, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. Brotherhood of men. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You fool, you may say I'm a dreamer.
I'm always so grateful for our music in this congregation. We are utterly blessed. Today our story is by Jamie Hinson Rieger, who is a Unitarian Universalist minister, and this is his story.
The Ant Farmers by Jamie Hinson Rieger, illustrated by Claudia Brooks. I don't know if you know this, but there are many different kinds of ants in the world who behave in all kinds of different ways. Some kinds of ants live by being farmers. Did you know there were ants who were farmers? Our story is about leafcutter ants. Leafcutter ants pull pieces of leaves off of a tree, and then they carry their leaves to their home underground and chew them up and spread them out in special rooms where fungus grows on top. Then the ants harvest and eat the fungus. It's just like growing corn or lettuce, only these ants grow fungus. So, once upon a time, there was a colony of leafcutter ants who lived in the ground under a big shady tree in Texas. And the ants farmed by taking bits of the leaves off that tree down into their home underground to grow fungus. They didn't take all the leaves from the tree, or even most of the leaves, but always stopped after just a little. One day, one of the ants, who was a smart, ambitious young ant named Myrna, said, "Why do we always take so few of the leaves from the tree? If we had more leaves to spread out, we could grow more fungus. And then we could eat even more delicious fungus." "We've always done it this way," said the other ants. "It's just how we've evolved." "That's no reason," said Myrna. "Evolution, shmevolution. I say we take more leaves." "What do you think that will do to the tree?" asked Myrna's little sister, whose name was Mo. "We don't want to hurt the tree." "Hurt the tree," said Myrna. "The tree is so big, and we're so small. The tree has always been here. It is impossible to hurt the tree. Let's get more leaves." So the ants harvested more leaves than usual that season, and the tree grumbled a little for its lost leaves, but the ants didn't hear it. They grew more fungus than the year before, and they ate until they were full and then some, and they were pretty happy about that. The next season, Myrna said, "Last year was good, but we should take even more leaves and grow even more fungus." What would we possibly do with all that fungus? The other ants asked. That's more than we can eat. Right, said Myrna. We'll have leftover fungus, and we can trade that with the other ants in the forest for stuff. The ants were confused. What kind of stuff? I don't know. Bits of amber, teeny tiny rocks, torn pieces from a discarded candy wrapper, threads from an old shoelace, you know, consumer goods. But the trees, said Mo, what about the balance of nature? Balance schmalance, said the ants. We want shiny things. So the ants cut even more leaves off the tree, and they grew even more fungus, so much they couldn't possibly eat it all. And they traded the fungus around the forest for all kinds of things found on the forest floor. Acorn shells, bits of feather, a mouse bone, a bottle cap. Myrna herself took to wearing a tiny piece of an old chewed-up starburst on top of her head, and she looked fabulous. But the tree did not look so fabulous, with so many of its leaves cut to ribbons, and it did not feel fabulous either. In fact, it felt very sick. And when a tree starts to feel sick like that, its leaves get sick too, and they stop being a good place to grow fungus, which is something the ants didn't know. Soon, new fungus stopped growing from the leaves the ants were spreading out because the leaves were sick, and the fungus that was already there began to die. What is happening to the fungus crop? Cried the ants in alarm. They tried to spread out even more leaves, but that did no good at all because the leaves were sick. Soon, all the fungus crops were dead, and the ants knew that that meant no more fungus could grow, because it takes fungus to make more fungus. With no fungus to grow, said the ants, we will surely starve. Myrna thought, what have I done? But Myrna's little sister, Mo, had an idea. She went from ant to ant and gathered up all the stuff they had traded for, as much as she could. And she went to a neighboring colony in the forest, and she traded all that shiny stuff, every last bit of it, for a little tiny piece of fungus, just the tiniest piece. That was all the other ants could spare. Then she brought it back to her tree. Look, said Mo, and she held up the tiny piece of fungus. It's so small, the other ants said. It will be enough, said Mo. We'll have to start all over and grow a new fungus crop from almost nothing. And we'll have to go very slow at first to give the tree time to heal. It will be hard, but we can do it. And when we do, said Myrna, this time we'll grow no more than we need and only take from the tree what it has to give. And so the ants returned to living in harmony with the balance of nature, and the ants and the fungus and the tree lived happily ever after. The end.
We will now sing our children to their classes. This week, Jewish people across the world are observing Passover, one of the holiest traditions of their faith. But this year is a painful year. It is a difficult time to be Jewish. Many in the Jewish community are deeply divided about the war in Gaza, and non-Jewish people, horrified by the genocide in Gaza, are using this as a reason to attack Jewish people with anti-Semitic slurs and violence. Other people are hating Palestinians and using slurs and violence against them. The situation is, of course, complicated, but it's also not particularly complicated. In our faith, we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, those who are Jewish and Muslim, those who are Israeli, and those who are Palestinian. Dehumanization and hatred and violence is always wrong. those things might be understandable, even very, very understandable, but that is the path that leads to reoccurring horror and violence in the world. And our faith asks us to uphold other ways of being. One of the traditional prayers of Passover is Deianu, which means it would be enough. There are 15 stanzas praising God in this prayer for all the gifts he gave Jews as they fled from slavery to a new promised land. If he had brought us out of Egypt, the prayer goes, Deianu. I practiced that. If he had split the sea for us, Deianu. If he had given us the Torah, Deianu. For this Passover, Jewish religious leader Kirsha Lavev Fife wrote this prayer. Though Deianu means it is not enough. If we gather around the Seder table in joy and don't make room for tears, lo, Deianu, it is not enough. If we tell our ancient story and don't make room for the modern one, lo, Deianu. If we ask the four questions and don't extend our curiosity beyond them, lo, Deianu. If we name the 10 plagues and don't consider what kinds of plagues are happening today, lo, Deianu. If we enjoy a Seder meal and don't at last acknowledge the many people in Gaza and beyond who are starving, lo, Deianu. If we say, let all who are hungry come and eat, and we exclude those whose perspectives don't match ours, lo, Deianu. If we acknowledge the crisis in Gaza and don't call for its end, lo, Deianu. If we say ceasefire now and don't uplift the need for hostage release, lo, Deianu. If we read the news and don't stop to feel its impact, lo, Deianu. If we commit to fighting anti-Semitism and don't commit to fighting Islamophobia, lo, Deianu. If we notice our fear and don't interrogate its origins, lo, Deianu. If we tell the story of our liberation and don't remember that it was and still is collective, lo, Deianu. When we believe in freedom for us and for everyone, and we commit to working towards it, only then will we be able to say, Deianu, it is enough. Let us take a moment, as is your tradition, to sit in reflection, prayer, meditation, and silence. There is so much happiness in this world, so much joy. I personally am taking so much pleasure from the blooming flowers and lilacs, which are my very, very favorite. There's also so much sorrow in this world, so much pain. We love and are torn from those we love and the things that we love. Our bodies get hurt and sick. There's always suffering and pain. And that is why in this community we hold each other in our joys and in our sorrows. And so I ask you this morning to come forward, if you would like, up the center aisle and place a stone in the water for your joy or your sorrow. This basin represents our community and the way we hold each other. And if you have a sentence that you would like to share about your joy and sorrow, I will be there with the microphone. And if you would just like to place a stone in silence, that is good as well. Maureen is holding her brother who is dying, who has cancer.
Today would be my mother's birthday.
My friend Karen, who's having a hard time with her brain cancer chemo treatment right now.
For the child that I care for who's struggling right now.
And this final stone is for all the joys and sorrows in the world that we hold in our hearts.
Comfort me. Comfort me. Comfort me, oh my soul. Comfort me. Comfort me. Comfort me, oh my soul. Sing with me. Sing with me, sing with me, oh my soul. Sing with me, sing with me, sing with me, oh my soul. Speak for me. For me, speak for me, oh my soul. Speak for me, speak for me, speak for me, oh my soul. Dance with me. Dance with me, oh my soul. Dance with me, dance with me, dance with me, oh my soul. Comfort me. Comfort me, oh my soul. Comfort me. Comfort me.
A reading by Wendell Berry, the poet. We Americans are not usually thought to be submissive people, but of course we are. Why else would we allow our country to be destroyed? Why else would we be rewarding its destroyers? Why else would we all, by proxies, we have given to greedy corporations and corporate politicians be participating in its destruction. Most of us are still too sane to piss in our own cistern, but we allow others to do so, and we reward them for it. We reward them so well, in fact, that those who piss in our cistern are wealthier than the rest of us. How do we submit? By not being radical enough, or by not being thorough enough, which is the same thing.
It is famously said that it is easier to imagine the end of the world than it is the end of capitalism. And I think many of us can appreciate that sentiment. We grieve the extinction of species, the loss of wild land, and live in fear of weather systems gone crazy, crashing wind, floods, roaring fires, droughts, all disrupting lives, sometimes killing and often starving. The world isn't going to end, but it is true that the world we have loved and needed is ending. Meanwhile, capitalism imbues everything we do. I mean, without capitalism, exactly where would our breakfast cereal come from? Or our tennis shoes? Or our wrapping paper? When I bring up the downsides of capitalism in casual conversations, I hear the inability to imagine anything else. Someone will always shrug and say, well, communism didn't work. And someone else will say, but look at all the amazing innovations and improvements and standards of living. And that is the end of the conversation. And really, how can we begin to imagine what that would look like? Most of us don't even know where our breakfast cereal or tennis shoes or wrapping paper came from and how they came to be. How can we possibly imagine a different way for them to come to be? Our theme this month is interdependence. And if humans are going to live interdependently with each other and the non-human world, we must have a way of meeting our needs for housing, clothing, food, health care, entertainment, etc., that values interdependence. We need an economic system that respects people and the natural world. At this moment in history, I don't think it matters whether we have believed capitalism is the best thing to happen to humans since the invention of fire, or if we believe it is the worst thing since the genocide of Native Americans. Right now, it's showing all the ways it does not respect most people, nature, or the web that connects us all. Before I go on, though, I think it's really important to define what I mean by capitalism. And it's not just me. I looked up definitions. Capitalism is an economic system where a person or business, individuals, private individuals, use their access to private property to create more wealth. Most of us get really terrible economic educations. So I want to be clear that capitalism is not the same as commerce or the exchange of goods freely in markets. Capitalism is an economic system where those who benefit most from the economy are those who own property, such as land, mineral rights, factories, and stores, and or have the money to purchase those things. Markets instead are about how we exchange goods and decide through exchange how much will be created. So, for example, you could have worker-owned businesses or organizations that are community-owned who sell goods in the market and must have a viable business to pay their expenses and meet their goals to pay workers well or have enough money to heal patients. Prices and quantity of goods created would be set by the market, but that would not be capitalism. Capitalism is based on the premise that the desire by individuals to create wealth will drive economic activity, and that will meet the needs of all the people. And in some ways, really, for some people, this has worked amazingly well. Look at the materialistic bounty of the middle class and wealthy in North America and Europe. That's most of us. But right now, in 2024, the desire for profit has turned to greed. And greed is winning out more often than the general welfare. Many people are getting left out, and more are being left out all the time. 1% of people in the world own 46% of the world's wealth. 52% of the people own just 1.2% of the world's wealth. And inequality has gone up every single year for the past years. Homelessness is rising steadily in the United States. In the richest country in the world, 500,000 people spend every night on the streets. And that number has continuing to go up since the pandemic. And 32 million people had to leave their homes due to climate change in 2022. Again, that number rises every year. Meanwhile, corporations and businesses are having their best years they've ever had since the pandemic. And they are driven to make more money each year, and they have figured out many ways to increase profit that has nothing to do with benefiting anyone but themselves, and often causes harm to others. Here are some examples. They create monopolies to stop competition and control prices. They clog up the markets. And monopolies are growing dramatically. In many cases, a handful of companies control a whole market. In the U.S., just two companies control most of the dairy market. Nike controls 86% of the sports shoe market in the U.S. and two-thirds worldwide. And this is one reason for the current inflation. Markets no longer moderate prices because there's no competition. Corporate profits have risen so dramatically since the pandemic, and economic studies have shown that the recent inflation is simply companies rising profits to make companies rising prices just because they can. Two, corporations refuse to pay the real costs of their businesses. Often corporations increase profits by not paying living wages or moving productions to places with low wages and without safety standards for workers. They fight against paying the real costs of production, such as pollution or climate change or ecosystem destruction. I could go on, but I will not. Three, they make products that don't last, so people have to buy more, and that's on purpose. Appliances break in 10 years, cars start limping at around 100,000 miles. A five-year-old phone or computer is considered absolutely ancient. And this is unnecessary and harmful to the planet and to consumers, but it is an absolutely wise and great decision if profit is your only goal as a business. They use addiction to bind customers to products. We saw this play out really big when Purdue Pharma lied about how addictive OxyContin was in order to sell more drugs and make more money. And so far, the opioid epidemic that the Sackler family started has killed 500,000 people and destroyed the lives of so, so many more. But it's not just the drug companies that do this. Other industries do it. Think of the high levels of sugar, fat, and salt in ultra-processed food. These are extremely addictive to our bodies, and most of us have these addictions. And we'll go back again and again to eat those things, even though we know for sure it hurts our health. Think also of the ways the digital media consciously uses our dopamine reward system to hook us to phones, social media, video games, and more. The advertising industry fosters self-hate within us to encourage us to buy products. That can't possibly be good for us. But consider how the media feeds the obsession with thin, young bodies as the perfection of humanness, and then sells us products so that we can be thinner and look younger. In this morning's reading, Wendell Berry is flinchingly critical as he accuses Americans of being submissive by allowing corporations to destroy the planet we live on in the pursuit of profit. Somehow we think this is holy and great. And I think Wendell Berry has a very fair critique of us. But I also know that most of us, including me, feel helpless as we watch. Our laws, our legal system, our sense of the inevitability of capitalism and its endless craving for more and more. Politicians who really must do what the wealthiest want them to do in order to get enough money to get elected in our political system. It is so big, and it feels so unstoppable. So some of us really try hard to fight against the worst excesses of this system without fighting the system itself, because how do you even do that? And others manage that pain just by looking away. Ursula Le Guin once wrote, "We live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable. But then so did the divine right of kings. Any human power can be resisted and changed by human beings." Procure. The first step, she said, is imagining something different. She said, "The exercise of imagination is dangerous to those who profit from the way things are, because it has the power to show us that the way things are is not permanent, not universal, not necessary." There is a reason that John Lennon's song Imagine has touched our hearts for nearly 50 years. Most of us want a sustainable, fair economy. Our Unitarian Universalist principles and our values cry out for this. We would like to live in a system where everyone can meet their material needs for food and housing and clothing and health care while the earth flourishes. To get from here, where we are, to there, we need to imagine the kind of economy we want and how it would work. And the really good news is there is a lot of people who have started imagining. Ideas are bubbling up from economists, activists, futurists, ecologists, and many others. Sometimes these ideas even get into the popular media for a moment or two. No method for meeting people's material needs is inevitable or right. The only reason capitalism exists is we created laws that make it possible. And we created a type of government that makes that possible. And humans created these laws and this government, and we can create new laws and a new government. Humans can do something else. We have so many times before. We can create economies based on social and ecological welfare. We can change how property is managed and what ownership means. Maybe it doesn't mean you can destroy the property, which it does now. We can provide food, housing, and health care in many different ways. Marjorie Kelly, who spent 20 years as the president of Business Ethics magazine, has come to believe that when business leaders feel like they must make money as the top priority, their integrity erodes, and so does their focus on other goals, such as quality products or services, and worker and environmental well-being. She now is advocating for a transition to worker-owned businesses, where workers themselves decide how to run a business to meet a whole variety of needs, instead of investors who only have the goal of making money when decisions are made about what to do. As I researched this sermon, I discovered the work of futurist Andy Hines. He read over 50 books and other materials to discover alternative visions for a post-capitalistic world. His work is about now 10 years old, and more ideas have been thrown into the mix since then. But for us, his general categories are helpful. The first vision he uncovered focused on economic systems that valued environmental stewardship instead of wealth creation. Here are some ideas being explored. Create a system where there is no waste. Everything would be reused or its parts recycled into something else. We would stop taking resources from the earth. End private ownership and manage our resources collectively and cooperatively. No one gets wealth because they are able to use a little bit of the planet however they see fit to use it. Focus on decreasing economic growth and instead focus economic activity on increasing well-being for everyone. This is called the degrowth movement. Reintegrate with nature and feel our interconnection with nature as part of our beings. Focus on local economies. Transition to a gift economy where people work for mutual aid and meaning and give away the products of their labor. Change to economic indicators that are pro-social and pro-environmental. So, for example, instead of hearing how the stock market does every day, we could hear the count of homeless people. Or instead of home unemployment figures, we could count those who have living wage incomes and those who don't. Instead of GDP, we could have a happiness report. Another vision Heinz discovered focused on economic systems that value decreasing inequality to create a more just and fair society. Here are some ideas explored to live this vision. Focus on society over economy. Capitalism puts the economy and work as central to all of our lives, and everything social is second. We could create an economy that supports social life rather than work life. We could redistribute wealth. We could have a basic universal income. We could confront the laziness myth. We have an idea which comes straight from Calvinism, which most of you have rejected, that unless people work or have made money in the capitalistic economy, they are without purpose and worthless. We need to think of people's worth differently. Use automation, AI, and other tech to produce goods as much as possible rather than human labor, while supporting human needs in ways that does not require people make a wage. Focus on local decision-making and direct democracy. Some of these ideas have been thought out a lot. Many books, organizations, thinking about them and talking about them. Others have been less thought out. And there are certainly so many more ideas than these, and these could be welded together and pulled apart and put together in different ways. There is absolutely no blueprint for a post-capitalist society. There is no action plan. We just aren't there yet. We are in the imagining and playing with idea stage. There is a movement, I mentioned it earlier, called the degrowth movement, which is about having more with less. And there is a book about it and other resources so people can consider this idea. I read this scathing review of it, and the main objection was there was no plan, no policies, no map to get there, to get from here to there. Well, that's true of all the post-capitalist dreaming. Capitalists itself also went through the stage for a while. It takes a while to move from one thing to another. But right now, the most important act, the dangerous act, is to simply imagine. It is to explore and talk about how things could be different, believing that the economy can be different and work to support different values than wealth creation. It's what we need to do now. We need to dream the radical dream. We can't know what's going to happen in the future. But when an economic system ignores the realities of ecology, is radically unfair to most people on the planet, and addicts us and harms our mental health in order to get us to buy more, it's probably going to crack. And some argue that it's cracking already. What is needed now is life-giving ideas that can grow up through those cracks. In our faith, we believe in creating a kinder world for ourselves and others. That is where our principles point, and that is where the proposed values point. We need a vision for what this world would look like. Just think. Christian nationalists have a very clear vision world they want to promote. In fact, I read the beginning of a Heritage Foundation report that's hundreds of pages long with exactly what to do to get to that vision. And their vision is a conservative world with narrow ideas of who people should be, ideas of freedom that mean freedom to destroy earth or communities just because one owns property, but not freedom to make decisions about one's own body or to share one's experience or express one's identity. And we, Unitarian Universalists, can't just keep saying that that's a horrible idea, even if we think it is. Instead, we need a more beautiful vision. One that we can tell people, one that inspires, one that excites. Because when many people share a vision, the spirit rises between us. And you gotta do when the spirit says do. So let's rise and sing that.
You gotta do what the Spirit says do. When the Spirit says do, you gotta do, oh Lord, you gotta do when the Spirit says do. Spirit says do, Spirit says do, Spirit says do, Spirit says do. You gotta sing when the Spirit says sing. You gotta sing when the Spirit says sing. When the Spirit says sing, you gotta sing, oh Lord. You gotta sing when the Spirit says sing. You gotta do, Spirit says 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 do. You gotta dance when the Spirit says dance. You gotta dance when the Spirit says dance. When the Spirit says dance, you gotta dance, oh Lord. You gotta dance when the Spirit says dance. Spirit says do, 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 Spirit says do. You gotta shout when the Spirit says shout. You gotta shout when the Spirit says shout. When the Spirit says shout, you gotta shout, oh Lord. You gotta shout when the Spirit says shout. Spirit says do, 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 Spirit says do. You gotta do when the Spirit says do. You gotta do when the Spirit says do. When the Spirit says do, you gotta do, oh Lord, you gotta do when the Spirit says do. Spirit says do, 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 Spirit says do.
The Spirit says, dream, imagine, enjoy. And that's what I ask for you. And if you want to keep talking about this topic, the social justice group is having a conversation afterwards. It would be a great time to talk. So people in the front can turn around, and the people in the back can face, and we'll sing Carry the Flame.